Foreword by Gilbert Carpenter Jr. to Watches, Prayers, Arguments. In the home of Mary Baker Eddy, the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, those whom she called mental workers were instructed to sit quietly in their rooms and watch and pray, usually for an hour at a time. These periods she called watches, after the master's query, "Could ye not watch with me 1 hour?" It was her custom to furnish these workers with written texts or outlines of thought which she expected them to amplify. Calvin Fry, her secretary, would pass these papers around to each worker. When there was a special need, the amount of such work was increased. Gilbert C. Carpenter relates how in 1905 the workers watched for 3 days and nights without going to bed or removing their clothes, being permitted 15-minute rest periods from time to time. When the work was done successfully, Mrs. Eddy told them so, and the home returned to its normal schedule of 3 main watches per day in which everyone, including Mrs. Eddy, participated. Each worker had an additional hour in which he worked alone. Mr. Carpenter, for instance, had what was called the midnight watch, watching from 12 to 1 a.m. Mr. Carpenter states that only Mrs. Eddy knew what the circumstances were that required 3 days of watching. She directed the line of work that was to be taken up, but she did not disclose what the problem was, nor even when it was handled. The compiler of these watches would have it understood that his purpose was in no sense a sentimental attempt to memorial something from the past. It is his conviction and hope that God guided him to collect these watches in order that the vital spiritual work for Christian Science and the world, which Mrs. Eddy conducted in her home and among her students, may be renewed and continued. If such work was needed and efficacious in her day, is it not still needed? And will not a vast amount of good be done if loyal students who are ready and fitted to carry on such work take it up with a consecration and dedication that augurs of success and merits God's approval and blessing? One attempt to discount the value of these watches to present-day workers who are ready for them is made by those who contend that their use would violate Mrs. Eddy's own bylaw in the manual, which forbids the use of formulas. Yet, this very bylaw states, "Sometimes she may strengthen the faith by a written text as no one else can." And what are the watches in this book but Mrs. Eddy's own written texts? Furthermore, if a student felt that it was not fitting to use the exact statements which our leader formulated by having them to read, he has the priceless privilege of learning just what were the weapons of her warfare which were found efficacious to the pulling down of strongholds. Thus will he be helped in formulating his own. A novice may study the music of a master with no intention of copying it. In his own efforts to write music, he is helped by a study of the composition of great composers. A study of the flight of seagulls helped the Wright brothers to construct a plane that would fly, but in doing so, they were not limited nor confined to a bird's use of his wings. The world may never know the loss it sustained when it no longer had Mrs. Eddy at the head of her household of mental workers, directing them day and night to pour into human consciousness a volume of scientific thought that aided greatly in counteracting and neutralizing the error in human consciousness and opening the way for truth to enter and govern. In this group, she was the chief worker who set the pace for all. Students found it not only possible, but easy on the whole, to sit and work for 1 hour, where she worked at the same time and took the lead, when they could not have done the same thing in their own homes for more than a short time. One is reminded of a bicycle race, where speeds of 50 miles an hour are achieved by having a motorcycle cleave the air ahead and the bicyclist pacing behind. In calling on students to watch faithfully with her, Mrs. Eddy put them on their honor that they would spend the hour in no other way, nor cut it short because it became wearisome. She indicated that the success of her church and mission was largely dependent on such work. In fact, she wrote to Hannah Larminie that if such watches had not been kept in Boston, the cause would have been lost. She said to her, "This cause must be carried by silent argument, just the same as you carry it physically." This is the great duty for Christians that they must do or be accountable to God for leaving it undone. In reading these watches, one wonders at Mrs. Eddy's insistence on students handling the weather. Gilbert C. Carpenter reports that she kept Laura Sargent working on the weather much of the time, even while she had other students working on specific problems that needed attention. If a student should become fixed in the notion that the entire mission of science is to heal mankind, it would help him to read these watches so that he might learn that in Mrs. Eddy's eyes it was no misuse of truth to apply it to the weather or other general discords. The task of the working scientist must include correcting the sense of weather if it violates the law of harmony, as well as to work on whatever else comes to his notice in the world that calls for divine help. On page 427 of the textbook we read, "Immortal mind, governing all, must be acknowledged supreme in the physical realm, so-called, as in the spiritual." The following extracts from the diary kept by Calvin Fry tell of an interesting story. August 6, 1900. "When Mrs. Eddy was out on the swing this morning, she told me to go and tell Joseph Mann for him and me to constantly hold the thought, 'The sun will not appear for 3 days and three nights, and there will be a constant rain. The clouds will be continually replenished. It is a very hot, sunny day. Suddenly, at 10 o'clock tonight, a severe thunder shower came up with almost a cyclone. Mother told me to tell Joseph there is no cyclone. We united in that thought, and in less than 5 minutes, the wind, which was filled with water like mist, came down to a gentle breeze. Mother then told me to tell Joseph no thunder and lightning, but constant gentle rain. In a few moments, the thunder died away in the distance, and there was a steady gentle rain. Today, August 7th, there has been a gentle rain for most of the day without thunder." Another point to be noted in these pages is Mrs. Eddy's frequent use of the names of various poisons and her insistence that students use a terminology that includes such names. On May 26, 1903, she said to her household, "If you take up arsenic, you will hit it in most of the cases in 1903. Mrs. Eddy was past mistress of the art of formulating, arresting, as well as scientific terminology that would challenge thought when perhaps it had become jaded in its use of familiar arguments. A declaration loses its incisiveness through much use, and since the efficacy of science is in proportion to the extent that thought is mentalized as well as spiritualized, the use of certain material terms in connection with that which is obviously mental becomes a help in resolving things into thoughts, and so aiding one in reaching that vantage where one admits that, even in the human realm, when one tells the truth about a lie, all is mind. For instance, when one takes material poison and suffers ill effects, mortal mind, not matter, causes such effects." Thus, the lesson Mrs. Eddy was bringing home to her students concerning mental causation became more potent when she called upon them to handle certain poisons like arsenic and mercury, when it was evident that she was referring to no possibility of such poisons having been taken or being present materially. Thus, she was referring to mesmeric poison operating exactly as the hypnotist operates when he causes a burn to appear with a piece of ice. On August 9, 1900, she wrote to the board of directors, "The one devil, evil, takes thought by drugs as well as siege. The drugs are morphine, opium, hashish, arsenic, rush radicant, strychnine. There is a need of awakening before it is too late. There is no doubt but that the effect of all mortal suggestions on the advanced student is like poison in the mental realm. It is strange, therefore, that Mrs. Eddy should find this out and instruct students to work accordingly. Among other things, Mrs. Eddy had her students handle electricity. On July 13, 1904, when Louis Strang was asked to interview a student as a prospective maid for her, she wrote, "Ask her, have you always been well and strong in belief before coming into Christian Science? How do you handle belief of nerves, MAM, electricity? Electricity functions by a discharge from the positive to the negative pole. From this phenomenon, we learn the nature of animal magnetism and its claim to be contagious and to dart from one mortal thought to another. Hence, our defense must lie in acknowledging this claim and then refuting it with the truth of being." Once Mrs. Eddy asked the student the question, "Do you understand the handling of electrical poisoning?" "It is mental thought transference with malice behind it, with an intent to harm. Mortal mind sends its messages without wires. It is aggressive mental suggestion maliciously directed." When Mrs. Eddy detected that the mental workers were not basing their prayers on a true and scientific realization of the nothingness of the error which they were taking up, she would stop their work on the basis that something was out of tune. At times, she told them to drop the argument entirely and hold with God. At other times, she would tell them to stop denying the error and to affirm the truth without reference to the negative side. Such instructions were given according to the immediate need, and in no sense were they general rules. When she found the students making error real, she had to stop their work and direct their thoughts to the right side only. When she found them repeating arguments like parrots without a spark of spirit in them or with a strained anxiety that carried little faith in God, she had to rebuke them. How do we account for the fact that at times she formulated prayers which had about them the aroma of old theology? Her mission was to call students to rise from the old personal sense of God to a scientific definition of Him. In this effort, there is a danger that one's scientific sense becomes so impersonal and cold that one ceases to feel the Father's presence as a palpable sense of divine love watching over one at all times and under all circumstances. Proof of this contention may be found in the beautiful definition of God which Mrs. Eddy gave to the class of 1898, as recorded on page 90 of Irving C. Tomlinson's book, 12 Years with Mary Baker Eddy. The male and female of prayer may be said to be the scientific exercise of power through scientific declaration, inseparable from a loving, humble acknowledgment of Him as ever-present and the one source of all power and intelligence. Mrs. Eddy watched to see that the students kept a proper balance in their mental ministrations. If she found prayer becoming too masculine, too coldly scientific, she would outline a fervent prayer of acknowledgement and petition to the loving Father-Mother forever near. When she found students using the repetition of mere words without spirit, she declared that they were chattering the letter of science like mockingbirds. She explained that the apathy, the lack of love and Christian vigor, came of seeking only the letter of truth and stopping there because it costs so much more to gain the spirit thereof. A formula is a superstitious belief in the efficacy of the repetition of mere words, like chanting some magic recipe illustrated by the witches in the play Macbeth. Even the watches in this book could be used as formulas unless, as one works and prays, he seeks to have God govern his thought. A formula is a human remedy in the mental realm, as medicine is in the physical realm, since it is based on the belief that a set of phraseology has the power to heal disease, when the scientific fact to be realized is that there is no disease to heal. Arguments in science are like the match one uses to light the gas in the stove. It is the gas that bakes the cake. Arguments become a formula when one tries to heal by their means, as if one tried to bake the cake with a match. Mrs. Eddy watched the students lest they sink to the level of believing that their declarations were what accomplished the work. On page 454 of the textbook we read, Remember that the letter and mental arguments are only human auxiliaries to aid in bringing thought into accord with the spirit of truth and love which heals the sick and the sinning. The airplane taxis on the ground to gain the speed necessary to rise where it may soar unfettered. The repeating and declaring of arguments, even those furnished by our leader, becomes the use of formulas, unless, as one uses them, he carries in mind the goal of science, where one's thought blends with God and soars in the illimitable realm of mind. Mrs. Eddy furnished the tools of scientific thought and work, but she told her students always to go to God for the wisdom to use these tools correctly, as well as for the love to put into them the unction necessary. Only as God directs our thought and work can we be sure that we are not using a formula. No student should approach any problem, even though he uses Mrs. Eddy's exact phraseology, without seeking God's wisdom to direct him and God's love to inspire him. Since God alone can guide one to treat a case scientifically and enable him to put into it the divine love that heals, to apply mere words, statements, or arguments to a case mechanically without the spirit or the directing wisdom of God breaks the letter and the spirit of the bylaw in the manual forbidding the use of formulas. There are those who contend that when Pleasant View, as Mrs. Eddy's earthly home, ceased to be her platform of scientific activity because she had left our midst, the watches which she issued to students should have been likewise destroyed, since they were adapted solely for use at the time she issued them. Mrs. Eddy's earthly home, called Pleasant View, or Chestnut Hill, is not important to students today, but her sense of home that she established is, namely, a place where one seeks to establish divine mind as supreme in all that he does, even in the most commonplace and menial tasks, and to continue this effort until he has made divine mind his permanent mind, and all belief in a so-called human mind has been ruled out. A student who seeks to fulfill this purpose may declare that he has been to Pleasant View in proportion as he fulfills the purposes of Pleasant View. By seeking to do everything from the standpoint of divine mind, he makes his own home a Pleasant View. And if using Mrs. Eddy's watches will help him in this direction, he should have them and use them eagerly every day. What can be more helpful to the student who is ready for the privilege than to learn from Mrs. Eddy's watches how to occupy his time?